Father Thomas Keating is one of the world's greatest living mystics. For decades, he lived an austere and fairly cloistered monastic life. Then he founded the Centering Prayer Movement as a form of contemplative outreach, a way of making contemplative practice accessible and available to everyone. Recently, Father Keating's been engaged in a series of interreligious dialogues with leaders of other faiths. He told Steve Paulson why he believes everyone should practice contemplative meditation.
To put it bluntly, to become God, not in the full theological sense, because theology deals with reason rather than experience. So the shadow side, as Jung calls it, of our personality emerges with a great deal of force after a while in that process, and you make yourself vulnerable through silent meditation.
Well, I would think that once you start doing this seriously, especially for a beginner, I would think that just spending all of that time in silence with your own thoughts...
Totally changed my life. I left whatever I was doing and entered a monastery, which was about as radical a thing. There were only three in this country at the time. And I deliberately chose it because it was an idea that if you really want to be a contemplative, best to choose the hardest life you can find.
And you became a Trappist monk, which
it's hard enough.
It's considered one of the most austere orders there is.
Yes, it's since been somewhat humanized and moderated since the Second Vatican Council, but it was radical. We got up 2 a.m. and 1 a.m. on feast days and about 6 or 7 hours of chanting of the offices, consisting of psalms and prayers, and then there was a lot of work.
Did that help you? I mean, just that austerity?
Well, the chief thing that helped me, because I had already started to, I was 2.5 or 3 years waiting to get in because I was too young to go it right away. And so during that time, I tried to bone up on being a monk as best I could in the world, to the great distress of my poor family who didn't know what the heck I was up to. It was really had a certain element of romance. I mean, what was I? I was 18, 19. And so I made several surreptitious visits to the monastery. It was like a tryst, really. The spiritual consolation is so strong that you can take all the other pleasures of the world and put them in the wastebasket without even noticing it.
Now, you are well known for the centering prayer. What led you to pursue this particular practice and to teach it to other people?
Well, it was a realization, you know, from my studies and practice and also my experience in the monastery. What really was significant about that is that you can't help but see how much in oneself has to change in the way of attitudes, dispositions. And there is a battle, a struggle between the dark side of one's personality. Paul calls it the old man. Well, with a little psychological tweak that might be more suitable to our time, I call it the false self. Merton used that term also. So it's the self that you don't even think of, at least I didn't, until you take the spiritual journey or the transformative process seriously. And in my day, and it was a mistake, the hardest life was supposed to help you to reach this. Well, I no longer believe that, but it took me 20 or 30 years to work through that mindset. And this is because the real focus or meaning or depth of a contemplative tradition as a heritage in the Christian scheme of things was virtually lost for all practical purposes on the level of parish life where most people are, or even in Catholic schools or seminaries. And so there is this depth that contemplative prayer introduces one to. One moves beyond the false self to the true self, which is might also be called the spiritual level of our being.
How similar is this process you're describing to some of the meditative techniques that you find in some of the Eastern traditions, whether it's Buddhism or...
Well, a human being is pretty much the same in everybody. So similar methods, and the chief one is to develop some capacity for concentration and clarity of mind, because everybody is battered around in daily life.
Well, part of the reason why I asked the question about the similarities between the contemplative Christian tradition that you're describing and some of the Eastern traditions is that the metaphysical systems are really very different. I mean, with Buddhism, I mean, the obvious difference is, I mean, this is not a theistic system. The life that you have chosen is very theistic. I mean, you weren't invoking God. You were invoking Jesus in particular. And I'm wondering how similar the experience is once you get past the words that you use or the Buddhists use. I mean, do you think the experience itself, the spiritual experience, is pretty similar?
I do. I think there are remarkable similarities. I find that the contemplative dimension is not restricted to any one religion. We're talking about a God whom we all agree is absolute or infinite in every direction, who is sheer isness and beyond that, who is just plain being and existence and therefore is present in everything that exists. So it's no one religion could possibly fully communicate this mystery.
God is a word that's famously hard to talk about, to describe.
Choose anyone you like.
Well,
fine with me.
I'd love to have you, as best as you can, talk about what your image of God is, or who is God, or what is God. How would you describe this presence, this being, whatever God is?
Well, to do this well, you have to go to heaven, or at least die. But this absolute, as it's called in Buddhism, is a good word, and in our interreligious dialogues that we had at the monastery in Snowmass, Colorado, we reached an agreement that we would call this reality that's called God in the Judeo-Christian tradition the ultimate reality. There was some discussion about calling it the ultimate mystery. Hence, anything you can say about God is a lie, strictly speaking. But since you need to say something or have some pointers towards the mystery, like Buddhism, you have the guy who pointed at the moon. But he didn't get enlightened until somebody cut his finger off, meaning there isn't anything to point to, because all that we want to say about God is already here within us at a level that is beyond any kind of articulation or experience.
One final question. There are more and more people now, secular people, who would say they don't believe in God, but who talk about experiencing the awe and wonder in nature in particular, and who talk about profound experiences there. And I'm wondering if you think what these people are talking about has much connection to the profound experiences that people of faith
well,
may
have. Well, sure. There's only one God, one happiness, one ultimate experience. And God has many pathways. Religion is only one by which he draws people to himself, such as generous service of others, conjugal love, nature, art, creativity, science. All of these things can be paths. But religion is, as a path, is kind of concentrated, and so I think it'll continue to be a major path for a while. But nature is an equal path, if not close behind. And even the fathers of the church recognized this when they said there are two revelations. One is the Bible, the other is nature. Well, now we're in a new phase in which nature is not just looking at a beautiful sunset, but figuring out what the whole universe is about, how it's constituted, what the subatomic world is involves, and life and study of the brain. All of this stuff is really revelations about God, how this thing works. These are God's thoughts. This is the way the Creator has figured this thing out. And well, what's the matter with you folks that you can't see this?
Father Thomas Keating, talking with Steve Paulson. Father Keating was the abbot of St. Joseph's Abbey in Massachusetts, and he's the founder of the worldwide Centering Prayer Movement.